The Dark Volumes is back from hiatus, and not long before spooky season. Well, we're going to kick it off with a bang. This episode's story is from a collection by author Aaron Ray Ballard, from his book All the Monsters Are Here, 13 Spooky Tales, also illustrated by Rusty Edwards. You can find plenty of other interesting and haunting tales, including Eden, Confession, The Night Crew, Under the Influence, Ghost Hunt, Night of the Living, and others, all ready to haunt your waking eyes from Mr. Ballard. And what's scarier than a good horror story than feeling like you're actually there? So starting with this episode, we're including something that's a little more engaging, courtesy of fellow professional audio enthusiast, John Auerbach. This is Aaron Ballard's A Vampire Walks Into a Bar. As I made my way along a rain-soaked downtown street, I remember noticing with undeniable pleasure what a clean-smelling night it was. Rain had a way of doing that, making things fresh. I always loved the smell of rain, along with the sweet smell of a lawn after it's been freshly mowed, or the delicious smells of a pancake and bacon breakfast, or the intoxicating scent of perfume on a nervous young woman out on a date with a man she fancies. I was on my way to Leonard's Tavern in this nostalgic state, not thinking about much else, when I picked up a scent that didn't belong. It was a scent barely strong enough to notice most times, but enough that night to stop me in my tracks. My senses on alert, I glanced around slowly from my spot on the sidewalk. I could now smell the unmistakable human aroma of desperation and nervousness in the air. If I were still a human being, I wouldn't hesitate to pay heed to the tiny shivers within warning me that I was in personal danger. And thus, being mortal, I would listen to those senses and get the hell out of there. But since I was no longer human, all it amounted to was my acknowledgement that someone, maybe one person, possibly more, was out there, watching and waiting, biding their time, waiting for their moment. I did not know at the time who or what was out there, but I did know that I didn't like it, not one little bit. I much preferred being the one hiding in the shadows, having the clear advantage, doing the watching. Still, if I've learned anything in my past 4 decades of immortality, it was to never underestimate anything. With as much subtlety as I could muster, I glanced around while taking the last few puffs off my cigarette. I exhaled deeply before dropping the nasty, habit-forming thing to the pavement, where I crushed it with the sole of my boot. After that, I walked on with a purposeful gait, suggesting to any unseen prying eyes that it was best not to mess with the likes of me. I approached the entrance to the tavern, but as my hand grasped the door handle, I paused yet again, not from the smell of danger, but due to the muted music coming from inside that brought a smile to my face. It was Little Red Riding Hood by Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs. Immediately upon hearing this, I was taken back to the day I had first heard it. I was a pleasant-faced, plump teenager wearing my prized Davy Crockett coonskin hat to my first boy-girl party. At the time, I had no idea girls looked down on frontier wear, especially if said frontiersman was slightly overweight. But I soon learned my lesson and stashed the hat behind a couch, retiring it for good. It was a little while later, as we were sitting around playing some lame card game, that the hostess of our little get-together, Susan Blakely, brought the room to life with her record player. I'd been ignoring her initial music offerings of Sugar Shack by Jimmy Gilmer and the Fireballs, and other songs I'd heard a billion times before when Riding Hood came on. To say it caught me by surprise was an understatement. It rocked my little world. I skimped and saved every bit of my allowance for the next few months until I could afford to go down to the record store on my own and buy it. Then I proceeded to play that record until the grooves wore out. It's amazing how quickly music can stir up long-forgotten memories like that. Up until that moment, I hadn't thought about being that young in years. It seemed like a lifetime ago. Then again, maybe it had been. That was back in the days when I looked upon the world with fresh eyes and a naive outlook. Back in the days when I could feel the sun's warmth on my skin without worry. Back in the days when I was still alive. With the passing concern of being spied upon now firmly in the back of my mind, I opened the door and stepped inside. Leonard's was a cozy, candlelit place where demons, spirits, and the like went to relax and enjoy a quiet evening among others, deemed unnatural to the normal world. In here, we were free from judging, fearful mortal eyes, and our own, at times, savage impulses. Impulses that serve to guide us, motivate us, and most importantly, sustain us. That isn't to say humans weren't allowed in Leonard's. On the contrary, most nights quite a few could be found in here. Some knew exactly what they were stepping into when they came here. We called them potentials. They had one foot in the mortal world, while the other was firmly planted in the desire to be just like us. Immortal, powerful, feared. Sometimes, though rarely, we granted the most deserving their wish. The rest of the time, the humans kept on hoping and dreaming, wishing to be something other than what they were, despite knowing deep down that day would never come. Then there were the rest of them, the human beings who were convinced that they were the center of the world, the top of the food chain, so to speak. We went on letting them think that way because why not let them think that way? What was the harm to either side? It was this deluded human belief system that had worked in our favor for such a long, long time. What's that old saying? Why fix it if it ain't broke? Anyway, when the blissfully ignorant humans dropped by Leonard's, convinced that this was more of the same old, we welcomed them. The whole time keeping our true natures and, if necessary, our appearances secret. For if the truth ever got out about Leonard's base clientele, let's just say the world wouldn't be ready for it. But that knowledge wouldn't keep the humans from trying to get rid of us, because that's what humans do. It's in their nature. If they don't understand something, they kill it, or at least lock it away somewhere where it could be studied and subjugated at will. Leonard's was run appropriately enough by the steady hoof of its namesake. In his true form, Leonard was a demon, who from the waist up looked like a goat with three horns atop his head. He also had a goat's beard, whiskers, and ears. In addition, he had a penetrating set of inflamed, furious eyes. This stood in contrast with his personality. For most of the time, Leonard was laid back and reserved, willing to sit back silently and observe all the goings-on around him. But when the situation called for it, this fearsome entity with his deep, booming voice and immense strength was a demon to be reckoned with and feared. To say that no one in the know caused trouble at Leonard's place was an understatement. But to those humans with not one iota of this other world, Leonard looked like an ordinary black man. An immense black man, but ordinary just the same. To these people, Leonard's nature reeked of melancholy and anger. They immediately sensed that this was a man who did not suffer fools gladly and was not one to be messed with. So they usually tried their very best to get on his good side, not knowing how near impossible a feat like that was. I went there quite a lot, so I should know. It's funny to me, and this never gets old, but every once in a while, one of those humans made Leonard smile. I didn't say laugh. Leonard never laughed. I said smile. It was sort of like what happens when a pet entertains its owner by doing something amusing or foolish. In Leonard's case, it usually happened when one of these mortals got drunk enough to begin making bold proclamations of their success in life or whatnot, or when one of them droned on and on about their unfulfilling life while drowning their disappointments in alcohol. When that happened, when you could see the corners of Leonard's mouth moving upward for a very brief moment, you could also see a flicker of fire in his dark eyes. And if you're anything like me, at those times, you can catch the unmistakable scent of sulfur. Those were the moments when you knew it was going to be a good night at Leonard's. From the outside, the place looked like a small dive. Dive in the worst sense of the word. It was tucked into the shadows of a neighborhood long gone to seed. Without a sign telling you it was there, you'd hardly notice it if you were just passing by on the outside, unless you already knew it was there. But once you stepped inside, it seemed much larger and gave off a strange yet pleasant vibe, as if you'd walked through a time warp and gone back to a simpler, more innocent time, if there had ever really been such an era. As you came in, a loud, colorful jukebox greeted you on the right. It played no music that had been released past the year 1990. Leonard hated country, rap, and what would pass for current top 40, so none of it was allowed in the machine. He preferred late 50s or early 60s rock and roll, a time he thought all good music, or entertainment for that matter, began and ended. It was only after several years of complaints from his female and vampiric waitstaff that he relented and finally added some new wave from the early MTV days to its playlist. All the walls were black and red, each covered with a series of large-framed posters featuring Elvis, Bogey, James Dean, and Marilyn Monroe hanging out together, doing various things, still looking the way they did when they were in the prime of their lives. The long bar Leonard stood behind was made of solid dark oak. It had stools before it, but very few were ever used. That's the way Leonard liked it. He needed his space. On this night, however, one of them was being used, but I'll get back to him later. There were many four-seat tables in the open, while comfy booths lined the walls. All the tables were covered with red cloth and large candles, which, with the exception of a series of muted lights over the bar and pool tables, were the only sources of light. On this particular night, on the shiny black floor, there was a yellow sign that read, "Wet floor, watch your step," near the path leading to the restrooms. Whether this was evidence of something sinister happening earlier that night, or something as simple as a spilled drink or flooded restroom, I'll leave that to your imagination. As I looked around, there weren't many beings there at the moment, but that would soon change. It was much too early for most of us. Like almost every night before, there were only two waitresses slinging drinks. They were the pale, tall, stunning, dark-haired twin vampire sisters, Eva and Ava. Wild and carefree Eva was wearing a slinky, sexy red number, showing lots of cleavage, while the more careful and proper Ava was dressed head to toe in an elegantly long, form-fitting black dress. Wild, hard-partying Eva, a long story of my own for another time, gave me a pearly-toothed smile and a wink as she headed from the bar toward a dark booth in the corner. There sat three black suit and tie-wearing demons with gaunt faces and small horns that protruded from their hairless heads. Their long, spindly arms ended in talon-like fingers. This well-dressed demonic trio were all trickster demons. Thankfully, they were paying none of us any mind as they were deep into a disturbing, laugh-filled, yet quiet conversation that I had absolutely no interest in eavesdropping upon. I found out a long time ago that it was best not to engage in conversation with any trickster demon you happen to meet, for they love to talk. Their favorite topic of conversation being themselves and all the horrible, clever things they did. For your future consideration, once you get one started, they'll never shut up or leave you alone until you kill them. Trust me on that one, and don't say I never warned you. Shy when compared to her sister, Ava stood near the jukebox contemplating a selection, then pumped a quarter into the machine. Only one, you say? Well, what can I say? It was an old jukebox. Ava pressed the appropriate buttons, and I soon heard the opening drum riff of the Go-Go's new wave classic, "We Got the Beat." I watched with a pleasant smile on my face while the sisters danced, slinging their arms wildly and moving their legs and bodies to the beat. I noticed from the outskirts of my vision that Leonard gave them both a disapproving shake of his horned head and a snort before resuming his wiping down of the bar. Leonard was and always will be a stickler for cleanliness. A slightly transparent specter sat at a small table in the back near the restrooms, keeping quietly to himself. Most people called entities like him a restless spirit, but he appeared quite the opposite at that moment. He was nursing his drink and staring into the empty space before him. He seemed to have a lot on his mind, and everyone was being nice enough to give him plenty of room. But, getting back to the story at hand, There was one patron there who had my curiosity piqued above all the others. It was the guy sitting at the bar. His unmistakable scent enabled me to recognize what he was right away. But I'm quite sure he had smelled me long before I even set foot in the place. I thought twice before making a move. Then I took a stool one removed from him and sat at the bar. I smiled at Leonard with the warmest smile my cold face could muster and said, "I'll have my usual, please." Leonard looked at me as if we'd never met before. I made sure I grinned only after he looked away. That was his personality. He proceeded to grab my drink without saying a word. He merely grunted. I slowly turned my attention to the tense, moody-looking gentleman sitting closest to me. He was tapping the ashes of a cigarette into an ornate ashtray. I set my gaze forward, pretending to watch Leonard prepare my drink, but I was really looking into the mirror behind the bar at the guy next to me. I couldn't see my own reflection, of course, but I saw him staring into the mirror as if he could see mine. I darted my eyes away from the mirror, and finally, after a few moments, I glanced over in his direction. As I looked closer, I noticed a nasty-looking, long, old scar running down the left side of his face. It started just below his cheek and ended somewhere below his neckline. He was wearing a dark leather jacket and a button-up shirt underneath, blue jeans and brown work boots. I also picked up the faint smell of brute from when he had last shaved, which appeared to be a few days before. If he'd been wearing a cowboy hat, I would have likened him to the Marlboro Man. But unless that classic corporate character sprouted hair and fangs and ran on all fours while howling at the full moon, I would have been way off. I must have been lost in my thoughts because all of a sudden, I realized he had turned toward me. "You got a problem?" he asked. His eyes were stern and dark green. They seemed to burn right through me, much like his reflective gaze did a short while before. His voice sounded weary and tired, as if he'd had enough of whatever he'd gone through, but still appeared willing and ready to fight if necessary. "I told you before that I hardly ever get scared, but just then, if for only a moment, I was taken aback. I decided to tread lightly. I lost my grin and said, 'Sorry, I couldn't help but notice the humorous situation we have here.' 'What humorous situation?' he asked, not seeing any humor at all. He took a heavy drag on his cigarette and blew it out through his nose. The smoke enveloped his head like a cloud before eventually rising and disappearing. He still clearly wasn't seeing this situation the same humorous way that I did. 'You know, a vampire and werewolf walk into a bar,' I replied. The smart-ass smile returned to my face. 'You got to admit, that's pretty funny.' 'Depends,' he said. He stubbed out his cigarette and turned his body toward me. 'Do they get along?' Suddenly, Leonard set my drink before me, causing my attention to completely shift toward it. I know I'm going to sound like an alcoholic or a drug addict, but so be it. Let's call a duck a duck. At that moment, all else faded away. I was, and still am, a slave to my thirst. I'm helpless in its sweet yet heartless embrace. And on this night, it was just the right temperature and the perfect color. A dark, rich red. It was hog's blood, which was sort of similar to a human's. It's nowhere near as good, but it's suitable enough to get you by. It's kind of like wanting ice cream, but finding only yogurt in your fridge. Yet, despite the siren's call beckoning before me, I somehow managed to pull myself back to the situation at hand. That was when I realized Leonard was still leaning over the bar, peering back and forth at both of us. He asked, "There a problem here?" I picked up another tinge of sulfur in the air. Glancing between them both, I gave them my best Eddie Haskell smile. It's the same one I used to give my mother all the time while I was growing up. It was the same one that almost always worked. I was quite the little charmer when I had to be. "No problem here, Leonard," I retorted. "Trust me, the last thing I want to do is fight a werewolf." I meant that. I'd done it before. It took way too long for the fight to end, and even though I was the only survivor, I actually think I ended up worse for the wear. A side note, here's a lesson you kids out there really need to learn. Despite the fact well-fed vampires heal really fast, fighting a lycanthrope is never worth it. Just apologize, run away, and live to drink another day. Consider that another important supernatural lesson to be learned. Now, back to the story. When Leonard was satisfied with my answer, he turned his menacing glare on the Marlboro Wolfman. "And you?" For a second, I thought Wolfie wasn't going to back down. It was something in the way he hunched his back ever so slightly. I could imagine the fur rising. It was also the way he perched himself on the balls of his feet on the floor. But good and welcome common sense must have raised its hackles in his mind, because all too quickly, he relaxed. He calmly reached into his jacket pocket and slid another cigarette from its pack, and all sense of danger passed. He shook his head no at Leonard, who was satisfied enough to walk away to the other end of the bar, where Eva was waiting to place another order. While Leonard poured the drinks, he paid no more attention to us. But I had noticed Eva staring at my lupine pal with an unmistakable glare of intense hatred. You've heard the phrase, if looks could kill. Well, that applied to the situation here. You see, for many centuries, well before recorded history, as I was once told by a being older than me, vampires and werewolves have never gotten along. Whether it was a difference of philosophy or a deep-rooted prejudice, who knows how these things start. For some primal reason, there's a lot of bad blood, pardon the pun, between our species. It doesn't matter if you were born into your supernatural team or were turned later. One of our most basic instincts was to dislike the other side. But I've always been a pragmatist. Unless someone wronged me personally, I held nothing against anyone. Sure, I've told my share of how many werewolves does it take to screw in a light bulb jokes, but when it comes down to it, I didn't and still don't dislike them as a species. I'd gotten into a row with one, as I previously mentioned, but that was over a beautiful female siren who ended up really not being worth all that trouble. But like I said, that particular beast actually did something to me personally. This new guy, he was just minding his own business, sitting in a bar. I turned as Wolfie glanced in my direction again, but it quickly dawned on me that he was glaring past me. I turned around to see Eva still giving him the stink eye. To his credit, he didn't back down. He simply smiled at her. In turn, she curled her lip at him before walking away from the bar. Round one to the wolf. I tried my best to defuse the tense situation. I know, generally speaking, our two sides don't really get along, but I'm not like all the others. "Really now," he replied with a smirk on his face. As I added, "I don't have anything against skin shedders personally." I immediately realized my racial slight and regretted it just as quickly. One gets so used to saying certain words or phrases in select company that you stop bothering to think about it, even in front of strangers. I felt bad. But before I could apologize, he surprised me by starting to laugh. I braced myself for the physical attack I was positive was going to come next. But before I knew it, he'd gone and loosened up on me. "I haven't heard that one in a while," he said. I took a slug of my drink, savoring the taste. "I have a million more." "I have a few myself."
"Really?"
"Oh yeah," he replied. "Let's see. Shitsucker," I countered with.
"Fleabait."
"Fangers."
"Leg humpers."
"Veiners." "Hairballs." "Wannabes."
"Fuzzy wuzzies."
"Vampers."
Pretty soon we found ourselves laughing pretty loud. Loud enough that the other patrons were now watching us.
"Anyway," I changed the subject.
"The name's Connor."
I extended my hand, which he shook.
"Michael."
"So how long have you been howling at the moon, Michael?"
He thought a while.
4.5 years this February. How long have you been a sunrunner?"
I smiled at that.
A few decades.
Michael tapped the tip of his cigarette on the bar before placing the filter between his lips and lighting it.
That's a bad habit you got there, I said.
That's the least of my bad habits.
I asked, what's your story in a nutshell?
Sure you want to hear it?
He asked. I wouldn't have asked if I didn't. He looked away for a moment. I saw a quick trace of regret on his face, but he launched into his story anyway.
It happened on a hunting trip. It was on me before I knew it. For some reason, it left me alive, but pretty chewed up. I healed really fast, which freaked the doctors out, and before I knew it, people I knew started disappearing, only to be found a few days later, torn to pieces. I left town before any more people I cared about got killed, or worse. Been on the road ever since.
I gestured toward his jacket pocket.
You mind if I burn one?
Why?
He asked, glaring up at me, trying to figure me out.
I can smell cigarettes on you.
But there's nothing better on earth than a free cigarette, I replied.
What about dirty habits?
He asked while reaching into his jacket for a cig while grinning from ear to ear. He handed it to me.
I got a few of those myself, I replied, a smile on my face.
What's your story, Connor?
Michael asked. He downed his shot of bourbon and signaled Leonard for another. I sighed.
It's hard to put my story in a nutshell. I got time, he replied.
I lit my cancer stick and launched into my own past. For me, it was a girl I met my sophomore year in college, right about the time old Tricky Dick left office on his own accord. After a large puff, I went on. One night, a few buddies and I went to this major party house off campus that we kept hearing about. We'd heard it was the hookup spot, that if you went there, you were bound to get lucky. Well, we were young, eager, and horny as hell, so we went and tuned in, turned on, and dropped out. It was the times, what can I say? Then, out of the blue, standing right before me was a hippie goddess on high heels. She had raven hair and ruby lips, and to this day, she's still the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And once I looked into her eyes, I was a goner. She stole my heart right then and there. The next thing I know, we're making out, feeling each other up on a couch, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm the luckiest son of a bitch in the world. Before I know it, we're leaving the house together, sweet and sordid promises of a wild night of sex floating in the air. Only as we're walking, she gets this devilish look on her face. She smiles, grabs me by the lapel of my jacket, and literally pulls me into a dark alley. Willingly, I might add. Michael chuckled as he downed another shot of bourbon.
I'm not boring you, am I? I asked.
No, he replied. Seriously, go on.
So there we were, I continued. We're in the alley, in the shadows, and I'm hard as a rock. I mean, I was hard enough to cut diamonds.
Another guffaw from my audience of one.
When from out of nowhere, her face changes. It goes from human to non-human like that. I snapped my fingers. And before I knew it, before I could even scream or piss my pants, that came later. She latched her teeth onto my neck, and she's drinking me like there's no tomorrow.
I took another drag, exhaled. I don't remember much after that, other than I woke up in the alley covered in blood and saw that the sun was about to come up. Let me tell you, until the first time you see smoke rising from your flesh, you don't know what running fast really means.
So, Michael said, both of our lives changed dramatically overnight.
I tilted my head. I was reflective for a few moments. Sometimes, not often, but sometimes, I find myself wishing I would have stayed in the sun that day. But then I quickly remember how much I like myself and laugh it off. I smiled, then took another sip of my drink. It was getting lukewarm, so I finished it off.
Did you ever find her again?
Michael asked. My raven-haired beauty, I replied. Michael nodded affirmatively.
No. What would be the point? She'd probably just end up being a real bitch anyway. Michael laughed again. I joined him. I was feeling good. The hog's blood had hit my system just right, and I was feeling a slight buzz. After a few seconds of silence, I peered around. A few more beings had arrived that I hadn't seen enter. There was a young-looking vampire couple sitting in a booth. They were obviously in love with one another, holding hands while staring into each other's eyes. They were sharing a warm glass of blood with two straws, all the while doing that annoying baby talk to each other. I decided to dub them Joni and Chachi. Another being, a short, bulbish, ghoulish-looking green-skinned demon, plodded its way to the restroom. I was only curious enough to see which door it would enter, and when it went through the one marked his, I turned my attention back to Michael. "What brought you to this place?" I asked.
I sniffed it out," he said. He glanced around the place, locking his gaze on Eva. "First, I sat at a table, but let's just say I wasn't getting any service."
We both sat and watched Eva for a while. With a body like that, it was easy to see why she was such an effective hunter. But right now, she was busy cleaning the table where the trickster demons had been sitting. She looked rather disgusted about something they'd done. "Some vampires are old-fashioned," I said, "too set in their ways." I noticed him grin, then he said,
"That reminds me, do you watch movies?"
"Sometimes, when I'm really bored."
"Well, there's this one called Underworld," he stated.
I interjected, "Is that the one with Kevin Costner?" Again, I was being somewhat of a smartass.
"No, that's Waterworld,"
he corrected me. He never even picked up on my humor. Oh well.
"The one I'm referring to is about vampires versus werewolves."
I raised my eyebrows. I'd seen it. The main vampire chick was hot. "Any good?" I asked.
"No, like all vampires, it sucked," he replied, making me chuckle. "But in it, a vampire gal and a werewolf guy meet and fall in love, much to the dislike of their respective kinds."
"So it's sort of like Romeo and Juliet," I asked. Pretty cleverly, I might add.
"Sorta," he replied.
I was getting slightly irked that he wasn't recognizing me for my wry intellect and overall great sense of humor. "What happens?" I asked.
"She ends up betraying her own kind in order to be with him."
"Interesting," I said, and sort of meant it. I only watched that movie to see the main girl get naked, but since she didn't, I pretty much erased the movie out of my mind. Then it occurred to me to have a little more fun with the guy. I said, "I think the last movie I saw was Interview with the Vampire." Michael shook his head vehemently as he put out yet another cigarette.
"Don't even get me started on that one. Tom Cruise."
He rolled his eyes.
"Please. A Scientologist who's a bloodsucker. If it wasn't so ironic, it'd be laughable."
"I don't get out to the movies much," I said. "It's hard to be around that many humans." I looked around the bar. "It's kind of like an alcoholic working in a bar or a fat guy going to an all-you-can-eat buffet. Why put yourself through it?"
"To be close to your food supply," Michael joked.
I was about to retort when I saw the smile disappear from his face. He quickly turned and faced the entrance to the bar, and I heard a low grumble coming from his throat as his eyes started to glow yellow. Right then, the door splintered open with terrific force. By now, everyone in the bar was watching as three people, two men and a woman, entered. The two men had their shotguns raised while the woman brandished a handgun. The trio smelled of BO, booze, and drugs, heavy on the former, and they had the wild-eyed look of those on the edge of reason. Needless to say, they looked as if they meant business. In any other bar, it would have been a very effective entrance. The key words here are any, other, and bar.
"Get down on the floor, now!"
their leader yelled. He had a rough face, very leathery, a lot like old Robert Redford. but only the Sundance Kid could get away with a look like that. Also, in this guy's disfavor, he had big pockmarks all over his face from the teen acne that had gone wild during his obviously misspent youth. It was then that I remembered the feeling I had before entering the bar earlier that night. It wasn't me they'd been watching. They'd been casing the whole joint. That was why I hadn't felt any sense of personal danger. The other man was younger than Redford Jr., but more gaunt and sickly looking. At the time, I thought he had features that made him resemble a hawk. He had weird, beady, stern-looking eyes that darted everywhere they looked as if he couldn't control them. He had a crook in his nose that made it seem like a beak. And the divot, or whatever the hell that thing is called in the middle of the upper lip, was really prominent. It was much later when I finally realized whom Hawkboy reminded me of. There was an entertaining yet stupid B-movie that came out a few decades ago called The Beastmaster. Now, I don't remember the actor's name, but he was also in V, a TV show that came out about the same time that was about Earth being invaded by human-eating lizard aliens. This particular actor, whose name I can't remember, was the hero in both of those, and he always struck me as being very weird-looking. Well, whatever his name was, I think I found his long-lost son. Anyway, I'm referring to this weird-looking guy as Hawkboy because that's what I've always called him when I tell this story. So I'll continue to refer to him that way, even though I've established he looked more like the Beastmaster. Now that I got that out of the way, the entire time this holdup took place, Hawkboy was covered in a sheen of sweat so thick he was constantly wiping it from his face. He showed proof of his rage when, in his haste, he shot into the ceiling with a thunderous boom, thinking somehow he was putting an exclamation on his associate's point. As the bits and pieces of plaster rained down upon them, I pinpointed this as the exact moment they finally realized their planned entrance had not had the desired effect. All of us, the bar's regulars, the very word makes me laugh, hadn't moved at all from our previous places. Most of us were sharing a look of mild amusement at what had transpired. It was almost like we were watching a very entertaining reality show. We wanted to see what would happen next, and who would be the one to do it. I was putting imaginary money on the ones who weren't human.
"Do y'all want to get killed?" Redford Jr. asked. "Then do what I said. Get down on the floor."
I've always been proud of myself for having the particular talent of saying the right thing at just the right time. A well-timed joke can alleviate any tension-filled moment. So, it goes without saying, even though I'm saying it, that I felt the time was right to say this to our guests.
"Man, you people picked the wrong place."
Leonard, angry because of what Hawkboy did to his ceiling, glared at the young man who did the damage. The demon's eyes had a furious glow about them.
"You're gonna pay for that."
The most strung out of this human mod squad, the woman, stepped forward. While once upon a long-ass time ago, this woman may have been a beauty, years of drug and alcohol abuse had taken their toll, leaving behind a husk of a woman who'd been ridden hard and put up wet. The veins on her forehead and neck were as prominent as lines on a road map. Most sadly comical of all, her eyes were open so wide they were literally bulging from their sockets. To this woman, in her agitated state, jonesing, I've heard it called, Leonard looked like a big, unarmed black guy who was being an obstacle along her path to get what she wanted. She screwed up her courage and aimed her pistol directly at Leonard's face.
"Does it look like we're kidding?" she yelled.
To her surprise, Leonard didn't flinch. Instead, he licked his lips in what could only be called anticipation. I watched as Michael raised his hands, as if he was about to speak, but Hawkboy rushed over toward him and slammed the butt of his weapon into Michael's gut. Werewolf or not, it must have hurt, because the blow sent Michael to his knees, gasping for air. Redford Jr. nodded, and Bug Eyes produced a plastic garbage bag from her jacket pocket and began to open it. Redford Jr. reasserted his pseudo-dominance over the room.
"We want the money in the register, and anything of value y'all have on you. Put it all in the bag. Do that and no one else gets hurt."
I couldn't help but smile. but Redford Jr. saw me. He wasted no time in walking forward and putting his shotgun right under my chin.
"What's so funny, pretty boy?"
he asked. "You really have no idea where you are, do you?" I replied. Bug Eyes was by my side in seconds, slamming the sight of her gun against my head. I actually winced from the pain.
"Shut up before you get your head blown off, asshole!"
She had screamed into my ear, which actually hurt more than the impact of the gun. I felt the side of my head, then looked at my blood-covered fingers. She'd opened me up pretty good. It was amazing what a little adrenaline and drug combo did for someone's strength. Redford Jr. yelled again.
"Put all your valuables in the bag. Don't make me tell y'all again."
Bug Eyes walked over to the young couple at the table, but when she held out the bag for them to drop their possessions into it, the young couple merely smiled back at her, revealing their sharp, pointy teeth, and waved their fingers. Suddenly nervous, Bug Eyes' head looked like it was on a swivel. She'd hardly paid attention to the patrons before now, but as she shifted her protruding eyes from one table to another, a look of creeping horror dawned upon her face.
"These aren't people," she said.
It was under her breath, barely audible, but not to me. But then she let out a blood-curdling, high-pitched scream, which everyone in the place did hear. Redford Jr. turned in a panic to see what was going on. He saw her running to his side. She immediately latched onto his arm and buried her face into his chest, muffling her panicked sobs.
"What the hell's wrong with you?"
Redford Jr. asked, getting angry. In between sobs, she screamed,
"These aren't people!"
"What?"
Redford Jr. asked. Now he was angry. Michael raised his hands to speak again, like some little kid in school. This time, he wasn't punished for it. Instead, Redford Jr. nodded his permission. Michael straightened himself up and laughed.
"She's saying we aren't exactly human."
Redford Jr. looked from hysterical Bug Eyes, hiding her crying face in his coat, back to Michael. Now Redford Jr. was starting to appear uneasy.
"What the hell does that mean?"
"Just what I said," Michael replied. "Look around. See for yourself."
Redford Jr. did just that. He looked from Michael to me, then over to Leonard. And that was when it dawned on him. I could tell just by looking into his eyes. He'd finally seen Leonard the way we all saw him, in all his horned glory. At that very moment, urine spread across the crotch of Redford Jr.'s pants and ran down his leg, leaving a trail. He stumbled back into a table. That's when he saw the young vampire couple behind him. Joni and Chachi smiled, baring their sharp fangs. Their features became sinister and animal-like. Redford Jr. yelled in horror. He tore himself away from his woman, leaving her defenseless. He tried to back away from everyone, but instead, he clumsily fell and landed hard on the floor. Bug Eyes merely screamed and stood in place, covering her eyes. Maybe she thought by doing this, we'd all disappear. Hawkboy had his shotgun held out before him. He was moving in quick arcs and circles, trying to keep anyone or anything from sneaking up on him. That was when the restroom door in the back opened. We all turned our heads at the same time and saw the short green demon standing near the restroom. Its mouth was hanging open in surprise because it had walked out of the restroom, not having any idea this was all taking place. This was a pretty funny moment, if you ask me. Now, fully panicked, Redford Jr. got to his feet. That's when he saw the morose spirit sitting at the table a few feet from where the green demon was standing. The spirit waved at him. He had a crooked smile upon his face. Even he was having a good time with this. Redford Jr. screamed loudly and started running for the door, but he was quickly met by the twin vampire waitresses. They were smiling and giggling, clearly in their element. They both shook an index finger back and forth, as if to suggest to Redford Jr. he wouldn't be going any further.
"Jesus Christ," Redford Jr. said.
Michael stepped forward, trying to be the reasonable man. But before he could speak, Hawkboy fired a shotgun into Michael's chest. The force of it blew Michael's body against the bar. He slumped, lifeless to the floor, eyes open wide, blood spreading in a pool below him. Bug Eyes screamed again. This was already too much for her to take, and now, I'm afraid, she'd totally lost it. Her screaming went from being entertaining in a macabre sort of way to just plain annoying. That was when I made my move. As Bug Eyes screamed and ran about like a chicken with its head cut off, I ran over to her, grabbed her by the head, and twisted it around. The sound of the bones in her neck breaking was mercifully quick, yet loud. There was only silence as her body fell like a sack of potatoes to the floor, landing in an awkward position. The front of her body laid flat upon the floor while her open-mouthed head with her bug eyes faced the ceiling. Redford Jr. was immediately swarmed by Eva and Ava, who took him to the floor and began feasting on him. He managed to scream a good long while, but eventually the sounds drifted away. Don't ask me to explain how, but during the melee, Hawkboy almost managed to escape out the door. Unfortunately for him, he was caught at the last second by our young vampire couple. Joni and Chachi had just enough time to throw the screaming man down upon a table when Leonard's voice thundered across the bar.
"No, he's mine," Leonard said. "Bring him to me."
Joni and Chachi did what they were told. Did they have a choice? They carried Hawkboy, still screaming, over to the bar and laid him forcefully atop it. There, they held him down as Leonard towered over him. I smelled a foul stench coming from the man, and it wasn't urine. I watched in particular glee as Leonard reached under the bar and came up with a steel spigot. He connected it to a long plastic tube. He wasted no time as he jammed the spigot into Hawkboy's carotid artery. We all watched hungrily as the man's lifeblood ran through the tube to an awaiting empty keg. It was similar to siphoning gas from a car by using a rubber garden hose. The unfortunate man screamed until there was hardly any life left in him, which took quite a while. Afterward, Leonard pressed and squeezed the man's body, cracking and breaking many bones in the process, all in an effort to force out every last drop of blood. It was like he was wringing out a wet rag. As this was going on, I saw a sight I thought I'd never see. I watched as Eva, dried blood upon her face, neck, and clothes, helped Michael off the floor. As Michael stood up, he winced in pain, all the time rubbing the area on his chest where he'd been shot. The physical wound had already healed to the point where it looked like it'd never even been there, but the sensation remained. His pellet-shredded, blood-soaked jacket and shirt were now the only physical proof he'd ever been shot. I asked him, "You all right?"
"No,"
Michael replied, shaking his head in irritation as he fingered his shredded jacket. He was truly disappointed.
"This was my favorite jacket."
He sighed, but soon noticed Eva standing near him. He appeared pleasantly surprised when she gave him a smile, revealing fresh blood upon her teeth. Michael surveyed the aftermath. As he reached inside his jacket, he let out an audible groan. He took out a ruined cigarette pack and shook his head in disappointment. I quickly offered him one of mine.
"Thanks for the free one," he said.
As I lit his cigarette for him, he raised his eyebrows in a funny way.
"What'd I miss?" he asked.
We shared another good laugh. Leonard shouted over all of us,
"Who wants some fresh blood on tap? On the house!"
Cheers went up all around the bar, and I could almost swear that I heard Leonard laugh. "Don't hold me to that," I said, almost. Anyway, as we bellied up to the bar, I noticed Michael was still fiddling with his jacket. "You can always buy a new one," I stated.
"But I really liked this one."
I could only smile as I patted him on the back. When our glasses were full, ours with blood and Michael's with bourbon, we all made a toast to the night, to the bar, and to old friends, and to new. Later on, I made my leave. I'd like to say I'd had my fill of fun and drink, but that wasn't the case. I'd always had a problem being around too much happiness. It made me nervous. Even when I was human, whenever things were going well, I was the one waiting for the other shoe to drop, waiting for sorrow or misery to kick down the door and make its presence felt. But tonight, I'd merely gotten bored watching Michael and Eva dance to the same damn Cyndi Lauper song over and over again. Time after time will forever be ingrained in my memory banks until the day I decide to snuff myself out. But considering how much I really like the pleasure of my own company, hopefully that will be a long time from now. As I left, humming that damn song, content enough with my life as it was and the friends I'd made, I thought to myself, it was a good night at Leonard's. Thank you for listening to the Dark Volumes podcast. Please spread the word. Madness does love company, and we'll talk again soon.